right, this is Maria Almariri.
This is Yasmin.
We are going to be talking about the Night Stalker, the kidnapper, murderer,
rapist, burglar,
all of the above.
His name was Richard Ramirez, the one and only Night Stalker. He was born February 29th, 1960, and that was the day that everybody's lives in California would change once he moved there. But he was a menace to society, and he just destroyed people. Like, he destroyed everything in his way. He hailed Satan. He thought that was going to do it for him, but obviously all it did was bring chaos to society.
That man feared nothing. He was a menace to society. He woke up every day, and he woke up.
He was just fiending for some action. He was fiending for killings. Let's just get into it, because we're talking a little bit too much. All right. So, basically, Mr. Richard Ramirez himself, he grew up with a horrible childhood. His father was very abusive. He lived with his brother and his uncle, and they were also messed up in the head. They would show him all of his of their Polaroids of raped people that they had raped, people that they had killed. He witnessed a murder in front of him as a kid, so that's traumatic, first of all, but he took it the wrong way, I guess, and he decided that was, like, fun.
Let me add this. This is an actual quote that Richard Ramirez himself said. When his cousin Mike would show him those Polaroids of the woman with their heads decapitated, he goes on to say that these show-and-tell sessions heavily influenced him, and he thought about it a lot. And when it asked how it influenced him, he said, he responded by saying, of course, sexually, it was all about sex. So to him, it was the sexual arousal. He got a kick out of that. The adrenaline, he loved that adrenaline. It's nasty.
It's nasty.
It's disgusting. All right.
So, let's talk about the case now. So the case, his motive started beforehand. It started when he was looking for some cocaine, and he didn't have enough money for it.
He was a heroin addict, that's why.
He was addicted. He was a druggie. So he didn't have any money, so he decided to go start robbing this lady, and then he decided to kill her because he couldn't find any money. And that's basically what started everything. That was his
that was the kill. That it was like a domino effect.
It,
like,
was the kill.
Once
that
first
everything.
One was knocked down, it went downhill from there.
It started a spree kill, which is basically what Richard Ramirez is mostly known for. His 1985 California spree kills. And let's talk about this. This man had how many victims? He had 43 charges, first of all. So the victims, he murdered 13 victims, 13 people, and he had 5 attempted murders. And these victims ranged from old to young, big to small, black to white, Asian. It did not matter who was in his way. He was going to kill them. He didn't have a type. So some of the victims that sadly died due to his mental illness were Dil Okazaki, Sai Lian Yu, Vincent Zazara, his wife Maxine Zazara, Jenny Vin Cao, the Peter Pans, they were a family, an Asian family, William Doi, Mabel Bell, Joyce Nelson, and Max Nielding. Those are only a few of the people that were victims, because there was also people that were victims to rape. There were little kids that he would rape and then just let them free. So there's a lot of people that basically just fell in his hands. Yeah. Moment of silence, because that was scary.
It's deeply disturbing.
It is.
The reason it's disturbing to me is because it wasn't a simple, I'm going to shoot you and then I'm going to dip. It was, he would use different things to kill people.
Yeah.
He would use, obviously, the famous .22 caliber that he was using.
And that Avia shoe.
The Avia
shoe. We'll get into that.
We'll get into all that detail and the evidence later. But the .22 caliber is where it started. He shot people. He started by shooting people, but you can see as through each victim, it became more violent.
More personal.
Way more personal, and he was more so doing it for the thrill. At one point, he smashed his foot into the skull of an old woman.
He was basically comfortable. He would do all these killings, go ahead and open up the fridge, eat some cantaloupe, and call it a night.
Yeah. He needed to recharge
after the murders. He's just a crazy person. I don't even know how to explain this, but basically the 1985 spree kills ranged. They were all around California. He would move from place to place, and he would obviously do it at night. He would sneak into people's houses, and depending on what he was feeling that day, some days he wanted to chop some people's heads off, some days he wanted to shoot them, but his MO was usually to shoot the man. He probably wanted to get the biggest threat out of the way, the strong threat out of the way, and then he would rape the woman, stab her, and most of the times he would abduct children or sexually assault them and then let them go. So there were living victims that come along later in the case that helped to capture him, thank God. Mm-hmm. But the trauma that they went through is unimaginable, especially he was ugly, so I can't imagine that being the last thing that you see.
Yeah, imagine, like, you're just chilling in your house one day, and, like, all of a sudden you're like, what's that smell?
He reeked, apparently.
And then you look at it, and then you see some guy with, like, gapped black teeth just, like, hovering over you.
Yeah.
And he was just like, let's get some action going. Like, I would freak. I don't even know what to do in that situation.
And I feel for all those people. I feel for those people's family. Like, in nowhere are we belittling the victims, because it's just, it's a, like, he literally killed them for fun. Like, how do you even redeem yourself from that?
You can't redeem yourself, especially with him, because he had no remorse.
He had no remorse.
He thought it was something cool. And you know what? I'm just going to add a little detail here. But this all goes into psychology. And as the psychologists believe that behaviors like this are learned, you know? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just due to, like, brain damage or trauma, but with him, it was mostly learned. Because think about it. He had his father's abuse.
He was exposed to all of
that. He had Mike's drug and rape stories and murder stories and all this and that. So to him, it was, like,
something normal.
It was something normal, and, like, he wanted to do it. Also, adding on to his little Satanism belief, he liked the idea that he was being disobedient to God.
Yeah.
You know, he even spoke about it. He's like, I know God's not proud of me. So
He told a woman when he was raping a woman one time, and he told her to not look him in the face. And she said, I swear to God, I won't. This man said, swear to Satan. Yeah. Swear to Satan. That's literally his words. Like, it's just scary. It's a scary position to be in. But yeah, now leading on to how these detectives caught him, I know they were going through a lot during that time. I can't imagine, like, not being able to sleep day overnight because some random person decides they want to start a spree kill.
You're just gonna be having Red Bull and coffee for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
So, the main pieces of evidence that, the detectives went off to catch him were these Avia shoes, these famous Avia shoes that kept on popping up at every one of these crime scenes. He wore these black Avia shoes that when the detectives cracked down on it, they found out that there was only one pair of those sold in California. Was it in California or was it in Los Angeles? Or was it a specific place?
It was one black Avia shoe in size 11 that was only distributed in California.
In California. So basically they cracked down on that. So they knew that this was for an individual person. Like, they knew that if they found the person wearing those shoes that they would catch the person, but other things also played into that. So there was also living victims that played into it that would give the sketch artist pictures and, like, descriptions of him. So they had sketches of Richard Ramirez. They had his shoe size and the Avia footprint that would show up at most of the crime scenes. And then they had the 22 caliber bullets that he would use to shoot and kill his victims. And there was also another specific type of bullet that he used, which was a red painted bullet that was not being manufactured anymore. So because of that, they were able to basically track down on the fact that he was it was like a specific type of bullet that he was using that was specific to him. And then there was also, along with that, the car that they found. There was this car that they found that basically led them to finding him. And the car inside of it, they had found a car to a dentist office that Richard Ramirez went to. And when they went to that dentist office, they got,
what she's trying to tell y'all is that when she went into the dentist office, did I say she?
Yeah.
I would say, when the detectives went into the dentist office, they asked the guy, and he was telling them, like, oh, Richard was actually, they had the name written down as Rick.
Yeah.
So that's when they first got kind of like a name for the suspect. They got a name named Rick, a guy named Rick, and they said, oh, he was here 4 days ago.
Yeah.
And the police assumed that he would be coming back, so
because
they set up a system.
Because he had teeth problems, like we said. His teeth were disgusting.
Yeah, he had cavities. He definitely was... Just don't do drugs. Anyways, but yeah, so they set up a little alarm system, and unfortunately, it ended up not working or something.
The detectives decided, the head of the detective people thing, the head of the chief, whatever they call it, he decided to take it down because it was spending too much money. So the day that they actually took it down was the day that he went inside, so they missed him. But I think it was the same day that...
Mr. Rick came up again. He popped up again, right?
Yeah, he actually killed that day, I'm pretty sure. Didn't he? Yeah, he decided to kill that day. But another thing, like we were talking about, was that car that they found the card in. They also found some fingerprints on the mirror that he was probably adjusting. And later on, that came into play when they actually found him, when they caught him. They fingerprinted him and it matched and stuff like that. All of that came together. But the name Rick was really important because once they found it at the dentist office, there was this lady that called in and she told, after, you know, the media was going crazy through all of this, so everyone on the media was seeing all this stuff, everyone at home. So when they heard about the 22 calibers and stuff, there was a lady that called in and she was telling the people, the detectives, about how her dad had a friend named Rick that was telling him how he shot an Asian family with a 22 caliber.
How did you start a conversation like that?
I don't even know. But
hey, Yasmin, how you been? You
I doing all right? People. I shot some people last night.
I'm good.
You did that? I did that.
How did it feel? Wait, one
great.
Out of 10.
It felt great.
Wow.
Maybe a 10, maybe 100 actually.
What gun did you use?
22 caliber, baby.
Wow.
22 caliber.
Yeah, that's great, man.
Yeah, that's great.
Talk to you later.
Yeah.
I'll see you with the...
I'll see you later.
See you later.
See you at the Greyhound.
Yeah.
See you at the Greyhound.
All right, I'll see you at the Jim's Barbecue.
Yeah, all right.
Tell the kids I said hey.
I'm dead. But anyways, so this lady called in. They got the name Rick from the lady, and then they started doing some investigation. They find out a few days later that a lady comes into the police... What is it called? The police?
The station. Come on, girl.
And she gives them a bracelet that she had got from her boyfriend who had a friend named Rick. Mm-hmm. So they went and they found that boyfriend. They cracked down on him. Apparently they beat him until they got the name Richard Ramirez. And once they got that name, they started connecting most of the dots together. They got his picture from like records that he had before of petty theft and like robberies and all this stuff. So he had pictures in the system. And once they put that out to the media, it's when it got crazy. Once they put his name out and his picture out to the media, that's when it was time for him to start running. Because time was ticking for him.
Yeah, he had to wrap it up at that point.
So once that picture went out, he was, I think, in another area of California. Because he had came back and he didn't realize that these pictures were all over the place.
Yeah, the public basically knew how this person looked.
Yeah,
basically.
So he was on a bus one day and... Some people, like, they started talking about it, you know, like, once they saw him, they started talking. And, basically, word started spreading out. They started calling the police. The community started running after him because they
started
noticing
him. You know, actually, when he was about to get caught, he was in the he was around the neighborhood. He was actually attempting to drag a woman out of her car when somebody saw him. Somebody saw him and was like, wait, that's the guy on the news.
Yeah.
And that's when, like, the neighborhood just, like...
Started going crazy.
Yeah, it turned into a mob. It turned into a mob of people, and they were actually trying to kill him.
Yeah, so luckily the police had come from the call that someone had called in, and they took him before they could finish him off.
Mm-hmm.
And so... they took him into court. That's when the whole court process started. And on September 20th, 1985, they came up with a verdict on 43 charges, 13 counts of murder, 5 counts of attempted murder, 11 sexual assault charges, and 14 burglary charges. And he was sentenced to death, but he died at the age of 53 because of cancer. The cancer death just doesn't sit right with me. It just doesn't sit right with me. All of the pain that he put his victims through, and then he went and he died from cancer. But cancer is pretty painful, but I mean,
I just feel like I wanted to see him in the chair. I just wanted to hear the zapping.
It's not a joke, but he's just...
I think it suits him. it suited him.
He's a very... I can't feel for him. I can't feel for him.
No, I don't feel bad for him at all. Like, not even an ounce. Like, even just looking at him, like, it's not a good sight to look at. Yeah. He's ugly. His soul is ugly.
His soul is dark.
Everything about him is ugly. He's disgusting. He's a vile, wicked human being.
He's just a violent person.
And you know what? He wanted to see the devil so bad. And you know what?
He got his chance.
He got
it. At 53.
He got what he wanted.
He got his chance at 53.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was the Night Stalker for you, Richard Ramirez. There's a lot more.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to it. If you watch the Night Stalker documentary on Netflix, there's a lot it cracks down about everything and how the detectives had to go through everything that they went through to catch this... I was about to say something bad. But to catch this man. To catch this man.
Moral of the story... I couldn't even give you a good one sentence summarization.
Yeah.
I just want to say that, like, I'm thankful I'm not a victim.
Yeah.
I'm thankful I'm not a family member of a victim, and I'm thankful I wasn't alive during that time, because no thanks.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's the end.
Thank you guys for tuning in.
And hope you enjoy.
Deuces.